Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us as we travel this week to the Congo. In the center of Africa lies the Democratic Republic of Congo, a huge country the size of Western Europe. With more natural resources than almost any other country in the world, it is one of the poorest due to years of colonization and many wars. The Congo River is the second longest river in the world after the Amazon River in South America. Many animals live here: elephants, lions, monkeys, great apes, and the hippopotamus, which on occasion has been known to visit the mouth of the Congo River and surf in the waves there. For further information about the Congo for children, I suggest easysciencefor.kids.com. Our first story is about a dog, a queen, and some very odd trees. Here is Kubangwa. There was a king who owned many dogs. He loved them all. Every day when he came to the table to eat, he called his dogs to him so that he could give them tidbits and pet them and have them to share his food. He loved all dogs, but there was one dog he loved more than all the others, Kubangwa. Now the queen, the favorite wife of the king, was 9 months pregnant and likely to give birth any day. But she was feeling restless and wanted to be busy and useful, so she called a servant to her and took him with her into the bush to collect firewood. She took the dog Kubangwa along with her as well. They soon collected plenty of wood, but of course, the queen was too heavy with child to carry the wood herself. Instead, she piled it all onto the backs of the servant and the dog. More and more wood, higher and higher she packed them up, until they both groaned under the weight. Kubangwa was a loyal dog. He wanted to please. He was big and strong, but he was getting old. It was a hot day. The queen kept piling up more and more wood on his back. At last, the weight was too much. With a groan, the dog collapsed. The queen and the servant knew exactly how furious the king would be if his favorite dog didn't come running for tidbits from his plate that evening, so they both did everything they could to save him. But it was too late. Kubangwa was already dead. So when the evening came and the king called his dogs to him, one of them did not come. The king ordered the palace and all the grounds to be searched. The search went on half the night, but there was no sign of the dog. He was an old dog, but not that old, and in full health. The king quickly came to the conclusion that someone had killed his favorite. He called all his people to a meeting and asked each one of them who had killed his dog. No one admitted it. The king was furious, certain that someone had killed his favorite dog, so he devised a test to make the culprit tell the truth and swore that every single person in the land would have to submit to that test, no matter how old or how young they were. Even if they were from his own family, every single person would have to go through with it. This is the test he devised. There was a river on his land running fast and deep through a gorge. The king ordered a rope to be attached from one side of this river to the other, high above the foaming rock-studded rapids below. He made each of his people cross from one side to the other, swinging by their arms. As they went, they had to call out aloud, "If I killed Kubangwa, I want to fall in the river and drown." Starting with the poorest and going up to the most important and wealthy, the king made every single one of his subjects cross the river in this way. When they had all passed the test, just to show how serious he was, he made his own family do it, one after the other. First, his children were forced to cross the water. They cried and wailed, and their mothers begged, but the king would not be moved. Then he made all of his wives cross, starting with the least favorite all the way up to his favorite wife, even though she was about to bear his child. She begged to be let off for the sake of their child, but the king was on a point of pride. No, she must go as well. As a concession, though, he allowed her to take a servant with her, the same servant who had been with her in the woods. The two set off across the rope together. They held on as well as they could, calling out, "If I killed Kubangwa, I want to fall in the river and drown." but at last it was too much, and one after the other, first the servant, then the queen, fell into the raging river below. The king was horrified. He had not expected this, but he had publicly said that whoever killed his dog should be left to die in the water. As the king, he felt he had to be true to his word, and now he was going to lose his favorite wife as well as his favorite dog. The servant hit the rocks and was killed at once, but the queen landed in the water. As she was washed away towards the rocks, he shouted after her, "You will die! You will die! You will die!" until at last she disappeared under the water. The water was fierce and deep. There were many jagged rocks in the torrent, so everyone assumed the queen would die. But she did not. Instead, the water rushed her away, right out of her husband's country and far away and into a forest of Uerja trees. She almost drowned many times, but in the end she was able to grab hold of a small plant and pull herself to the water's edge. She crawled out exhausted onto the bank and fainted away among the trees that stood tall around, as if they were looking down at her and wondering who or what she was. She had once been a queen, but now she was alone in the bush, wet, hungry, with no help, and about to give birth. "Oh, if only these Uerja trees were people," she exclaimed. Now the trees had never seen a person before, and they were fascinated. To her amazement, the trees replied, "We will become people," they said, "but you must never tell anyone we were once trees." The queen made her promise. The trees became people. Very shortly after that, the pregnant queen gave birth to a healthy boy. The boy grew up, and in time, he became the king of the forest, and all the trees became his people. Many years later, one of the tree people, who was unhappy with the rule of the boy king, went to see the old king in the neighboring country. "Your wife survived. Your son was born," he told him. "He is now a king in his own right." The old king was angry at the news. Firstly, that his word had not been carried out, and second, that a rival king should be ruling in a neighboring country. He decided to kill his son. He sent people to commit the murder, but each time they arrived, the old queen greeted them with a song. "The king here is tall and beautiful. My son, your father's friends have come to kill you, but they will not succeed." When the young king heard this, he did not harm them in any way. Instead, he welcomed them and gave them gifts of goats and cows and asked them to settle in his land and stay with him. Seeing this, each assassin put away his spear and stayed to live under the young king. The old king was astonished to discover that his people were staying with the young king, so he went to see for himself. The old queen greeted her husband in the same way. "The king here is tall and beautiful. My son, your father has come to kill you, but he will not succeed." His son welcomed his father into the kingdom with goats and cows, just as his friends had been before him. The old queen came forward and welcomed him herself, and told him how sorry she was that she had accidentally killed his favorite dog. The old king was deeply moved and shed tears to see his queen again all these years later. He admitted that over the years he had regretted his hasty actions. He stayed for several weeks, and as he watched his son and saw how gentle, how beautiful, and how shy he was, he reminded him of what he had been like when he was young. All his aggression melted away. He thought to himself, "This kingdom belongs to my son. I can't kill him, but I can unite our kingdoms." So that is what he did. The old king became the high king, while his son ruled his own kingdom and became his heir to rule both when the older man died. And so all ended happily. As for the Uerja trees, they liked being people and never turned back into trees ever again. This next story is about a little girl. Here is Pippi Donga. Once a mother lived on her own with her child called Pippi Donga. Pippi was a very curious little girl who tried to be good but found it very, very hard. One other thing you should know about her, she had the most beautiful voice. One day, the mother had to go out to the fields and leave Pippi at home on her own all day. "Now, Pippi, you must not leave the house while I'm gone," she told her. "It's very important. The world is full of danger for a young girl on her own. Now, do you promise, Pippi?" Pippi promised her mother she would not go out all day, but would wait for her at home like a good girl. The little house was very stuffy. Still, Pippi didn't want to disobey her mother. Two of her friends came and asked her to join them in a swim at the river. "I can't go out," she said. "I promised my mother." But her friends scoffed at her. "Don't be such a baby. Your mother will never know. What harm can come to us by the river?" So she left after all, despite everything her mother had said, and went to the river to swim. While Pippi was swimming about and playing on a log, the so-called friends sneaked off and stole Pippi's clothes. By the time Pippi noticed that her friends were gone, they and the clothes were far away. Poor Pippi was a mile from home with nothing to wear. What a mess! Of course, she was not going to go home with nothing on, so instead she picked some big leaves that were growing nearby and tried to cover herself up with those. She hadn't gone very far when a man came along, carrying a drum under his arm. "What's this?" he said. "A girl walking about covered in leaves like a vegetable garden? What's happening here?" So Pippi told him with a song that she made up right on the spot. "I'm Pippi Danga, I'm Pippi Danga. Oh, Pippi, poor Pippi, bad Pippi Danga. My mummy told me stay alone home all day, but my friends took me out and stole my clothes away. I'm Pippi, poor Pippi, bare Pippi Danga. Poor Pippi Danga walking home alone." The man's eyebrows shut up his head when he heard her sing. He liked that noise. "Poor Pippi Danga," he said, "but I have a plan. Why don't you hide in my drum? No one will see you then, and I can carry you home to your mummy, and no one will know how silly you've been, or see you walking around looking like a bag of salad." Pippi thought it was a good idea, poor thing. She crept into the drum, but as soon as she had done so, the man quickly put a skin on it and nailed it firmly down. Now he had her trapped in the drum. Off he went as fast as he could before any found out what a wicked thing he had done. When he got to the next village, he went straight to the square where everyone gathered and started to boast about how he owned a magic singing drum. Of course, everyone was curious about that, so they gathered around. When there was a big enough crowd, the man lifted up his hands and began to beat the drum. And inside, poor Pippi began to sing. Everyone was amazed at the wonderful singing drum and never guessed there was really a little girl trapped inside it. They gave that wicked man plenty of money for his trick. Off he went on his way, whistling a tune to himself, happy as the day is long and not caring one little jot about poor Pippi trapped in that drum. From then on, that man had no worries in his life. Whenever he wanted food or money, all he did was just play the drum and make poor Pippi sing out. People came from far and wide to hear the wonderful drum, and they were all willing to pay good money for the pleasure of listening to it. What a life he lived, wandering from village to village, playing his drum. But one day, it so happened, he came back without realizing it to the village where Pippi herself came from. He played his drum there just as before, and just as before, everyone came running round and gave him money for the pleasure of hearing his wonderful singing drum. But among that crowd was Pippi's mother. When she heard that drum sing out, she thought to herself, "I know that voice. That's no drum singing, and that man is no musician either." That night, she crept out and went to the place where the man was staying. She found where he had kept his drum. He had drunk too much palm wine, and he was fast asleep, and he didn't hear a thing. With a blunt little knife, she levered out the nails holding that skin down one by one, and sure enough, out crept sorry little daughter, Pippi Danga. Mother and daughter kissed each other and hugged. Then the mother sent her daughter back home while she dealt with the drum. She had a bundle with her, and in that bundle she had a little rooster. Now she tucked that rooster inside the drum. Then she nailed it up tightly and crept away. The next morning the man awoke, and first thing he wanted his breakfast. So he did what he always did when he was hungry. He took his drum out into the center of the village and shouted out as loud as he could, Everybody, listen to me. I am going to play my wonderful magic singing drum, the only one in the world. Wait till you hear what a beautiful voice it has and how cleverly it sings. Come quickly, or you shall miss my marvelous performance. Everyone came out to listen. The man lifted up his hands and beat the drum, and cock-a-doodle-doo, kick-a-ree-kick-ee, crowed the rooster inside. What's this? What's that dreadful noise? That's no singing, everyone cried. The man tried to explain, but the louder he tried, the louder the rooster crowed. In the end, everyone was so fed up with him, they chased him out the village, and he was never seen again. As for Pippi Donga, she never disobeyed her mama ever again. Our next story is quite whimsical. Here is Running Faster Than the Wind. A man and a woman lived together, and soon enough the woman became pregnant. But before the baby was born, the man decided that he didn't want to stay. I'm going, he said to the woman, and there's nothing you can say that is going to change that. After I'm gone, if you give birth to a son, I want you to call him by a special name, Running Faster Than the Wind. That way, I can be sure he will remember me. The woman begged him to stay, but his mind was made up. So he left, and in due course, a baby boy came along. Although she had thought of a great many better names to call her child since then, the mother decided to do as the man had asked and call her child Running Faster Than the Wind, because it was the one and only thing the child would ever have from his father. The boy grew up, and there was nothing unusual about him except his name. His friends at school thought the name was hilarious and spent a lot of time teasing him about it. Many times he wished he was called something really ordinary, but he wasn't, and that was all there was to it. He just had to live with it. Secretly, he hoped that there was some other special reason for his father wanting him to be called that, but the years went by and nothing happened, and it looked as if it was just wishful thinking. One day, Running Faster Than the Wind was walking in a wood, and he came across a hole in the ground. He walked around that hole and had a look at it. It was empty, and yet a curious rushing, whistling noise was coming from it. He got closer and looked in, and discovered that this wasn't just any hole, because in that hole there lived the wind. Even at home, the wind couldn't keep still, and it was rushing round and round inside, and it was that making those curious sounds. So this is where all the wind lives, thought the boy. It seemed to him that it could be no coincidence that he, of all people, with his special name, had found that secret hole. If the wind was in that hole, he thought, maybe he ought to be in it as well. So he climbed in. The wind wasn't having that. It came roaring straight at him. It buffeted and punched him and whirled him around like a leaf in that hole, and then whoosh! It came rushing out and up, 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 higher and higher into the air, carrying that poor boy with it. It got so high that the trees underneath him looked like moss growing on the ground. Then down, 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 until he crashed to the earth, right through the roof of his father's house, knocking it to pieces. His father came rushing out. What have you done? My house, it's ruined. Poor Running Faster Than the Wind crawled out, bruised and battered and exhausted. He could hardly walk, let alone run faster than the wind. Oh, so it's you running faster than the wind, said his father sternly. What do you think you're doing wrecking my house? Wrecking your house? It nearly wrecked my whole body, he said. It serves you right for giving me such a stupid name. Sometime after this, Running Faster Than the Wind met some old school friends of his, the same ones who always used to tease him and make his life a misery at school. Off they went, same as normal, teasing him away about his ridiculous name. His friends suggested that they put their quarrels behind them and go off together on a trip across the Congo River from Kinshasa to Brazzaville. Running Faster Than the Wind agreed, so they all caught the ferry and went across. When they arrived there, they went straight to the beach. Now, it was a hot day and everyone was thirsty. The friends had spent all their money getting across, so they all banded together again and went up to Running Faster Than the Wind and asked him to give them money to buy some water. "Money for water? You must be joking," he said. But they wanted it. They were sure he had it, and they insisted he give it to them. Running faster than the wind could see another beating coming along. "Very well," he said. "I can get it for you, but you must do what I tell you. I want you to grab hold of my clothes." "Is that all?" "Well, we'll happily do that," they said. "Then you won't be able to get away." They all grabbed hold tight of him. "Now," they said, "give us the money." "As tight as you can," shouted the boy. "Too tight for you to get away," they sneered. "Good. Wind," shouted the boy. "I'm coming back in your house." When the wind heard him say that, it came rushing at him in a rage and blew him up in the air again. And of course, all his friends holding tight onto his clothes got blown up as well. Up, 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 higher and higher, until the sea looked like a blue field and the clouds were scudding along underneath them, and even the biggest ships looked like little bits of sticks floating far below. "This is the deal," said Running Faster Than the Wind. "You wanted water? There it is. I'm going to let you go." The friends were terrified. "No, please don't do that. Don't let us go. Please, no," they begged. But Running Faster Than the Wind did it anyway. He shucked off his clothes and down they fell. Down, 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 until with a mighty splash they hit the water and carried on all the way down through that until they hit the bottom of the sea. No one ever saw them again. As for Running Faster Than the wind carried him away right around the world until it got tired of the game and dropped him down, bang, right where he had found him, on the beach in Brazzaville. And I don't think anyone ever tried to bully him again. Our last story is about magic, fishing, and football. Here is The Plate and the Cane. A wife and a husband lived together by a lake where they caught fish for a living. One day, out on the lake with his nets, the husband pulled in a huge plate. What to do with it? They had no use for it. It wasn't a particularly nice plate. So he threw it back. As soon as it hit the water, the plate called out to him, "Don't throw me away. Ask me." The fisherman was amazed and scared, but fascinated. "Ask you what?" he demanded. "Just ask me." The fisherman was troubled. What if the plate was trying to trick him? But then, what if it was doing him a favor? In the end, he decided that this was something he just couldn't miss. So he took the plate home, and he said to his wife, "You'll never guess what I caught today." That evening, they both sat and looked at the plate. It seemed impossible to imagine that it had ever talked. "What shall we ask it?" said the man. The wife thought for a moment, then she said, "Well, let's ask it for food. We never really get enough to eat. Asking for food should be quite safe." The husband agreed. "Plate, feed us, please," he added. At once a wonderful feast was spread out before them. Plates of meat, which they almost never had. Wonderful fruit, everything they could hope for. And it wasn't just food that the plate could serve up. Money, clothes, anything they asked for, the plate produced. After that, they never needed for anything. Now, that couple had a son who loved soccer, or football, as it is called in the Congo. One day, this son went to play a game against a rich kid. This rich kid was boastful, a bully, disrespectful to his parents, and always expected his own way. He boasted so much about what a great player he was that the fisherman's son grew angry with him, and an argument broke out. In the end, they had a bet. Who was the best football player? The rich kid bet a fine new football. "And what about you?" demanded the rich kid. "I'm always hearing about that famous plate of yours. If you're so sure of yourself, why don't you bet that?" The fisherman's son was so angry, he stupidly agreed to bet the plate. They played the game. The fisherman's son was outclassed. That rich kid may have been boastful and irritating, but he was a great football player. So now what? Too ashamed to back down, the fisherman's son crept into his house, stole the plate, and gave it to the rich kid. When he got back home and his parents discovered what he'd done, they were furious. They beat him for his stupidity and went straight round to the rich man's house to ask for their plate back. But of course, the rich man said, "No." "Why should I?" he asked. "It was won fair and square. You should teach your son to behave with more respect to you." "That's rich coming from you," said the fisherman, "when everyone knows how rude your son is." "That may be so, but the plate is still mine," said the rich man. "But I'll tell you this, I'll make a bet with you. If you can find a way to make my son behave, I'll let you have it back." The fisherman went home feeling miserable. His son had given away the only bit of good fortune they'd ever had. "And there's no way on earth anyone could make that boy behave himself," he told his wife. "Everyone knows he's the rudest, most unpleasant kid in the village." There was nothing for it but to get back to the fishing. A few days later, the fisherman was out on his boat with his son, and he found caught in the net a cane. "This is no good to anyone," said the father. "Although I could find a use for it if I thought about it," he added, looking sideways at his son and swishing the cane. The son looked ashamed, and the father threw the cane back into the water. But as soon as it hit the water, the cane shouted out, "Don't throw me away. Tell me, tell me." The father was delighted, but still a bit suspicious. "Just because you have one piece of good luck, it doesn't mean you're going to have a second." "Tell you what?" he asked. "Just tell me," said the cane. The fisherman pulled back the cane into the boat. "Now then, what shall I ask it?" he said aloud. "I know. Cane, beat my stupid son." The cane set to work with gusto, gave the unfortunate son a beating of his life. It whipped him all the way back to shore and all the way back home, and still carried on when they got home. "This is the life," said the fisherman, lying back and watching while his son hopped and howled. Every time he tried to escape out of the door, the cane would whip him back in. "But this is perfect," said his wife. "Now we have a way of teaching the rich man's son his manners, and we can get our plate back." The next day, the man and his wife went to see the rich man and explained to him that they were ready to take up the bet. The rich man called his son to him. Now show me what you can do," he said. "Cane, beat this boy," exclaimed the fisherman. At once the cane started to work. The boy whooped and yelped and ran and twisted this way and that, but no matter where he went and what he did, the cane was there behind him, whipping merrily away. "This is perfect," exclaimed the rich man. "I'm far too busy to make sure my son behaves himself, but now I don't need to, because this fine, thin fellow will do all the work for me." So the deal was made, the cane for the plate, and everyone was happy. The fisher folk, because now they had all they could ask for. The rich man, because he already had enough, but now he could keep his son in check. And the fisherman's son, because he had no need to worry about that troublesome cane anymore. Only the rich boy had any need to feel sorry for himself, and that just serves him right. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll be traveling back to where we all live, the Pacific Northwest, the home of many different and colorful Native American tribes, with rivers filled with salmon and forests where huge bears live alongside elk and deer. Stay safe, have fun, and let your imagination soar. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading. This has been a production of KCIW LP 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.